The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. How are you all doing today? Glad to be with everyone. This is episode 470, dated Friday, June 26th, 2026. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how are you? Peter?
Well, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Peter.
Okay,
go ahead.
Sorry, I must have muted myself. We're doing fine here. The weather here is kind of drizzly and typical fall weather here, but we're still in the spring and summer, and it's supposed to warm up here. And warming up here is like 70 degrees early next week. So we're doing fine.
We're in the 70s for the most part, cloudy. We're going to have some on and off showers maybe later on today, but we're going to have a decent weekend. So that's good news for us here to start our. And before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you very much for airing us when you do, for producing a quality program, I should say. Thank you for that. I want to thank Peter from Canada for posting our programs on one of his chat boards. We appreciate that very much. Also, our media outlets. Thank you very much for airing us when you do. That's much appreciated. And finally, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, who archives our shows on my website. In order for you to find the archives, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
AI is a very big part of our lives. It's been trending for a long, long time. It's involved with a lot of what we do. And because it's become so popular, I thought we would have a panel discussion on that topic today on In Perspective. So we brought along three special guests with a lot of knowledge in artificial intelligence, and I will introduce them one by one. We start out with Al Argo. Al, welcome to In Perspective. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Joel Snyder, welcome.
That's right. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
And finally, and last but not least, Peter Donahue. Peter, welcome to our program. Peter Donahue. You have to unmute, I believe, Peter, because we cannot hear you. Hello, Peter Donahue.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Peter, you're going to have to turn off that voice thing. We hear it.
Okay. It's off now.
All right, great. Welcome to In Perspective, Peter.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, let me start out by saying that I think AI is great. I think it's fabulous the way it's being created, the way it's being applied to different projects and different other aspects of life. My only concern at the moment about AI is the effect it's going to have on our economy. I know people have argued in the past, well, when the horse and buggy left, cars were invented. Yeah, but you know what? People drove the cars. You know, they used to ride the horse and buggy, but now they learned how to drive a car. So people were still working. With AI, it's going to take some jobs away. It might take a lot of jobs away, and that's my concern. Although there are two sides to the subject, and that's why we're having this program today. So where I'd like to start, anybody who would like to speak on it first, and mention the pros and cons of this phenomenon, if you will. Who would like to start?
Well, Bob, I'll jump in. This is Joel.
All right, Joel.
And as I imagine your listeners know, I've been working with audio description for over 45 years now. I was involved with the pioneering the very beginnings of it back in 1981 in live theater. And I also, though, I trained folks in the writing of description, but I've been a member of SAG-AFTRA, the union for voice artists, for over 50 years, actually. So I have a healthy respect for human voice talents and such. And but I will agree with you, Bob, that AI apps are inevitable and will surely bring great advances to all of humanity. But at least for the foreseeable future, in my humble opinion, an experienced and human voice talent, and I'm focusing on sound, on the voicing of audio description. I think that experience, that kind of nuance, that kind of oral interpretation technique that's provided by human analysis and production is really, really critical. I think indeed that the power of a audio description is dependent on and enhanced by the use of writing and oral interpretation techniques that I haven't heard expressed by in the use of AI. When I say AI in the voicing of description, I'm referring to speech synthesis or text to speech, which some might say, well, that's not really AI. I throw it in that same hopper as AI in general. And the other thing I wanted to mention, Bob, was because you brought up the notion of employment. Some folks may not realize that audio description is not simply for folks who are blind, primarily. That's the primary audience. It's by folks who are blind. Some of the best writers, consultants on the writing of description are totally blind. Some of the best audio editors are totally blind. Some of the best voice talents for audio description are totally blind. And since you mentioned employment, it's, you know, some major media streamers have already gone to using AI for the voicing, and that has automatically resulted in less work for those
yes.
blind individuals that specialize in voicing description. We're talking about the number that's thrown around a great deal with regard to folks who are blind, 70% unemployment. Well, AI is just going to make that worse with respect to description. I want to reference a blind voice talent who I've hired several times, Satana Howry. She's a blind audio description narrator with credits including Seinfeld. And she was once asked at a panel by a representative from one of these big media companies that's heavily invested in AI audio description voicing. She was asked, but Satana, aren't you grateful that we're able to describe so much more content now thanks to AI? Now, I question the proposition behind that statement, that question, but let's let that pass for a moment. Satana gave the perfect answer. She said, yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. Yeah, in the same way that when the power goes out, I'm grateful for a wind-up generator. I'm glad it's there, but I want normal electricity to be the standard, not wind-up generators. So I'll just lead off with that, and if there's time a little later, Bob, I've got a couple examples of audio description as voiced by AI and audio description as voiced by a trained human voice talent.
Joel, speaking of employment, when I was referring to how AI was going to take over our economy, I did not necessarily mean just blind people, anybody who's working, writers, you mentioned the media. I listened earlier to an AI play-by-play of a baseball game done in AI, so that's going to take away jobs away from broadcasters. There are so many jobs out there that I believe are in jeopardy for blind and sighted people.
I think you're right.
Bob, right. I agree with you that AI will definitely take some jobs for our truck driving friends. Between now and 2030, they will likely not have a job, at least a large, maybe, I'm not sure, the latest, maybe 75-80% of our drivers with these big 18-wheelers, their jobs are gone by 2030. That's just around the corner. That's according to research. So again, I'm Al Argo. I spoke at the World Blind Union last year I followed a company called Meta and a company called Google on a platform at the WBU in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And I shared for that group. First of all, I want to ask you, Bob, you mentioned that AI is really, you know, mainstream now. But I want to ask you, because you're our host this afternoon, thanks for hosting this call. How old, in your opinion, or in your expertise, how old is AI? Is it, and I asked the audience this last year, is it under 20 years old? Is it 20 to 40 years old? Is it 40 to 60, 60 to 80, or 80 to 100 years old, in your opinion? How old is AI?
At least 40.
And I'll open it up for the other panelists. How old is AI? If he says 20 to 40, so the answers are under 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 60, 60 to 80, or 80 to 100 years old. A, B, C, or D? A, B, C, D, or E?
40 to 60.
Yeah.
And okay. I only say that because Joel made reference to, I think it was Joel who made the reference to screen readers. Now, I go back to the 1970s with the Kurzweil machine, and the Kurzweil machine was a scanner. And AI, you know, you could say JAWS is AI. You could say that MVDA is AI. The Kurzweil machine was AI. And if that's the case, we're going back to the 70s.
You're right. Yeah, AI. You're right. So that's a great guess. And a lot, and people in the audience, and even people with some of these companies, like global companies, they raise their hand that AI is less than 20 years old. But actually, the correct answer is not A, is not B, is not C, which you said is 40 to 60. The correct answer is D. AI is actually about 75 years old. It was introduced in a summer experience at one of our Ivy League colleges here in the United States. And so I'm very happy that it started here in the United States, but it spread rapidly around the world. From the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now in the last really 4 years, it's leaped onto the attention of people globally. But there's a large
So it was introduced in 1951. What were its uses back in the early 50s after it was introduced for good?
Well, it was at a research university, and so that's why, you know, research is so important, and that's what my role. I'm a researcher at a university in Alabama, and so my dissertation is on artificial intelligence within our blind and visually impaired global community. So I'm looking at not only the impact of AI on American citizens, but the impact of AI for our global population in India and China. There are more blind people living in India and China than anywhere else in the whole world. And a lot of that is the percentage of population because, India, China, and America are the three largest countries in the world. And of course the fourth country is Indonesia. And I met some wonderful Indonesian colleagues several years ago in India at one of our global blind and visually impaired events. But I just want to share with all of us the impact of AI on our blind community globally. And I'll just make it short, like 30 seconds. First of all, it's assisting with mobility, with autonomous robots, autonomous cars, assistance with transit systems globally. So mobility, accessibility, what you guys were talking about with screen readers and other forms of accessibility for us. Early diagnosis is huge because if we can help our children and grandchildren with early diagnosis, some people might inherit a blind or visually impaired disease, and some may not. But if that early diagnosis is there, even if it's assisted with humans or artificial intelligence, that's a pro. I think all of us would agree. So we're talking about mobility, accessibility, diagnosis, and then education. You and I, all of us on this call, are where we are in life in large part because of educational opportunities. And AI is really helping with that. We see that firsthand in India, firsthand in the Philippines, firsthand in different countries around the world, including America, coming out of Perkins and in different places that's really embracing AI within the blind visually impaired community. So education, and that leads to better employment. So I'm looking at it that really AI is going to take some people's jobs away, but it's going to open up jobs for our community and everybody in general, because we need to upskill, we need to uptrain, and we need to be continually learning. I tell people, Bob, that my name's AL. I'm Al. I am from Alabama, but AL is really an acronym for always learning. So I'm a big proponent and a big advocate of lifetime learning. And so if we get a good education and if we can sustain lifetime employment, that leads to better entertainment options. And so with voiceover, some of that's entertainment, but some of that's educational. Out of Australia, there's a World Blind Golf Association, and some people on the call might be a part of that, but AI is really helping, with those of us who play golf. I haven't embraced AI on the golf course yet, but that technology's there. And so whether it's golfing or bowling or watching television or even creating music, there's the whole entertainment aspect. So just discuss briefly six positive benefits of AI within our global blind and visually impaired community.
Okay. I would like to now hear from Peter Donahue before we continue.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I would tend to, second a lot of the stuff that Al said, because, AI is kind of a mixed bag, but we have had personal positive experience with it. In fact, we just got handed a situation, with our cleaning lady in that their marriage is on, her marriage to her husband is currently on the rocks. This is a Hispanic couple. And at the age of 15, a celebration called a quinceañera is held for, Hispanic girls, and a consultos is for Spanish boys. And because of the ongoing financial situation, this this family could not do one for their daughter. So my wife Mary and I talked about it, and we said, okay, how can we do this in a way that's not going to bankrupt us, number one, and number two, make it something that this young lady will remember and share it with her children, her grandchildren, and it'll go down the line. And another neat thing about this, and we're going to get to AI, a quinceañera or quinceañeros has never occurred in this type of family. So with the help of AI, not only have we reimagined this event, but AI has played a large part in helping us know what occurs, how these things normally work, and helping us plan it. In fact, I used YouTube and Gemini to put together the music playlist for the dinner, which is going to be here on Sunday. And then there's a Cornerstone Church here at San Antonio. They have a huge 4th of July concert, and that's going to be the faith part of it. And it's going to be quite an event with, gospel singer Matthew West coming in. And the whole thing will climax with a fireworks display. And so, naturally we said, okay, what do we have to do to kind of reimagine things for us to be able to do this without going broke? So we tied into the concert for one thing, and AI helped us there. Then, had to research, what kind of meals are served at something like this. Gemini helped us there. And, the list just goes on. And I've told Bob and a lot of people that I wish AI was around when we were in school. I went to the Oak Hill, the Perkins Schools for the Blind, and I had a perfect storm of being bullied and over the top, under control, out of control infatuations. And if AI had been around, I could have gone on and done research and be able to, help as an outlet. And, speaking about golfing, yes, I've seen some of the work that's being done. I wish that more was done to introduce blind people to the game of golf here. And, here's, you know, we need to find out what they're doing in Australia and see how we can make that work here. And it's a shame that, more of us aren't playing golf, because blind people were doing that back in the 60s and 70s when we were in school, but we were never exposed to the game. Now we have ways to find out just how the game is adapted for blind people to play it. And one way I thought of these golf simulators that they have, I want to get over to a place where they have these, and there's a number of them here in town, and see just how they work, how accessible they are. And you know, this is just scratching the surface. And as Bob knows, I'm a big fan of autonomous, rideshare. That's a fascination I've had ever since the 1960s. You know, like we're talking about 1968, 69. I was an Imagineer back then. You know, I was always saying, what if, would that be cool? I knew when high school kids grow up, you know, eventually they get a driver's license. So I was thinking, how could a blind person do that? And I had people around me that thought I was out of my mind and was sometimes disciplined, you know, for advancing such ideas. Well, that fell to the back of my mind and fell to the wayside. And then in 2011, the National Federation of the Blind did a demonstration project on the track at Daytona. And the president, Mark Riccobono, drove a car around on part of the Daytona Speedway using an interface that most likely included AI components. I don't know what's happened with that project, but since then, that has been supplanted by autonomous rideshare. You know, and we're talking about companies like Waymo, Tesla, Zoox. We have Waymo here at San Antonio, but it's just not in our part of town. We just want to get up here because we're looking forward to being able to have another transportation option. I was telling, in fact, the same cleaning lady, I was telling her the other day that I would realize my childhood dream when we decide when to go somewhere, and I'll just tell her, hey, if your car is still not fixed, not a problem. I will drive us there. And AI, Waymo, Tesla, all those companies now make that possible. And I think that's wonderful. We just can't wait to take our first Waymo ride. Let's Tesla and Zoox get up here first. And we do want to do some rides. And yes, Dr. Schneider, we do plan to do audio description of some of them from the blindest perspective. So I mean, I've even said, you know, if AI can help us resolve a lot of the issues we've had to deal with, God bless it.
Peter Altschul, I know you had a question or two. Go right ahead.
Oh, I always have lots of questions. But I wanted to share an experience that I had recently. I'm a member of a jazz quintet called the Flying Sardines. And part of what we were talking about via text is our logo, our design. And people have been sending pictures back and forth. And, you know, even 2 or 3 years ago, I wouldn't be able to even comment on those pictures. It would just say image on my phone. And now I'm actually getting descriptions of what those images look like. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but at least I can make an intelligent comment. And that is amazing progress, something I could never imagine happening, you know, as I said, even 2 or 3 years ago. I want to ask Joel a question, having to do with the work you've been doing for a while. And I've been thinking about this AI thing, and in some ways it's a trade-off between quality and quantity. And here's what I'm thinking, and help me if I'm, which you think. So I would imagine that AI is going to make it more possible to audio describe more stuff. With AI, there's so much stuff that needs to be described on YouTube and other places. I know, my wife works at a community college, and a lot of their videos have no audio at all. And so having, you know, being able to do a quick and dirty, description would be really helpful. I would imagine it would be a little cheaper. The concern, of course, is, how will that, apart from the losing some blindness employment and all that stuff we've talked about, is the quality, right? Right now, I would imagine, but maybe I'm wrong, that the quantity, that the quality of such AI described thing wouldn't be as good as what you've been doing for a long time. So if I'm making sense, talk about that. Does AI sort of change the game in that way?
Well, yeah. And I'll harken back to my very first comment was that AI promises great advances to humanity in all manner of ways, including all manner of ways for folks who are blind. And you guys have put forward a number of examples of that. In fact, Al, I think, I attended your session in Sao Paulo because I also spoke at, the WBU conference in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Let me answer Peter Alsch's question. The ACB actually put forward a resolution that was voted positively by the membership several years back that really focused on human voicing for dramas, for comedies, for professional entertainment. Very specifically did not want to get into audio description, voicing, or creation of description, which is a whole other thing. I don't know of any AI product that can come close to doing audio description of moving images in what I would consider to be a quality way. And sorry, but I come from the school of the of thought that says sometimes better no description than bad description. And I'm talking about theater, dance, opera, movies, commercial movies, videos, because someone listens to bad description and they say, this is confusing. This is not enhancing. This is distracting. So it turns people away from audio description. So, but YouTube, you're absolutely right. There is no way that the hundreds of thousands of videos on YouTube will be described professionally. Absolutely not. And there's a role for AI there. But I do want to caution something. And by the way, Al, with respect to how long AI has been around, I hear you. But I think AI in the way we're talking about it is in that 20-year perspective. Using AI to do the kinds of things that are involved, autonomous vehicles, et cetera, that's all really quite recent. And something that's also quite recent too is the understanding of the voracious energy consumption involved in AI. You know, all around the world, all around the country, certainly, there's all kinds of concerns being expressed by communities regarding the construction of these massive data centers and the voracious energy it will consume, water it will consume, impact on environment. So I think that, you know, Peter Donahue said it's a mixed bag. And I think that's right. It's a mixed bag. And I would just again emphasize that my focus is on audio description and its creation, the writing of it, as well as its voicing. And then the third component is the audio editing, the layback. And actually that's been automation of audio editing has been around for at least 10, 15 years and still doesn't come anywhere near the competence that's involved with a human audio editor that's experienced with audio description. One last thing, Peter, I'll show you said, quantity versus quality. And I mention that all the time. I'm not going to get into naming particular companies, but there is a huge media streaming company that has made the case for, well, we'll be able to do more. Now, what does that mean? Do more. They do professional human based audio description for their original productions, but they say, oh, well, But for our catalog, which is thousands and thousands of professional videos, commercial videos, well, we'll use speech synthesis for that. Now, I don't quite understand why the distinction is being made that they are acknowledging there's better quality so that you can use it for their original productions. Oh, but not for, the library of work that they have. And the other thing I'll say, when you say they're able to do more, oh my goodness. You know, to produce audio description for a feature film costs about $5,000. The budgets for many feature films are more like $50 million. It costs less to produce audio description for a feature film than it does to cater craft services, food and drink for the cast and crew for one day in production of a film. So when I hear a major company say, well, we'll be able to do more because we're going to save money, I think that's a bit disingenuous.
Maybe, Joel, but on the other hand, I come back to the example of the local community college that I'm talking about. Sure. They shot these videos. They're supposed to be welcoming to students. And, you know, basically what you hear is a bunch of lousy music. You don't hear any idea of what the, you know, what the thing shows. And I would imagine that AI, maybe not now. I'm not sure what the state of the art is in this regard. Might make it possible to give some sense of what's going on. Like getting back to my flying sardine thing I was talking about. The descriptions that I got were not like world class, right? They didn't, but they were there. They gave me enough information that I could at least have say something intelligent about the images. Okay. That's a major step forward for me. It's not perfect, but it's a step forward for me. Sure. And I'm wondering if the same thing isn't true for like these videos that community colleges are doing or community agencies or something like that.
That's right. Possibly, but I'll tell you something. You know, most of those videos, are fairly short.
Yes.
You know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And a full audio description work for that could be had for $350, $500, something like that by humans. But I'm agreeing with you and what was said earlier about YouTube videos, maybe those community college videos. These are information based. They're not dramas. They're not.
Right.
Comedies, that require, I think, the nuance of human voicing. And in a way, Peter, what you're talking about is not even, in my humble opinion, audio description. It's labeling. It's naming things. The ability to point your phone at a can of peas in the grocery store and have AI assisted, telling you what's the ingredients or what, you know, like number of calories and such. That's great. And it's a great use of AI, but is that description or is that conveying information, labeling something, naming something? So there's a difference.
Oh, no, that's fair. That's completely fair. I'm not aware enough of the technology to know what's doable, what isn't doable, but all I know is there's a desperate need for, you know, the community college that my wife and I, my wife works for, you know, it would have been really nice if we had some sense of what was going on visually when this lousy music's being played and that's all you hear, you know, even if it's, you know, 15 seconds of kids are wandering around having a good time or something, but I don't, you know, anything would be better than nothing at this point.
And so that kind of thing, perhaps so. But you know, it's a legal requirement. If that community college is getting public monies from the federal government, they are supposed to be accessible.
Yeah.
And
well,
too many arts companies and too many films, goodness, captions, subtitles, audio description. It's an afterthought. Oh, right. We've got to do that because there was an ADA, requirement or a lawsuit or whatever. They don't think of it. You know, they don't start their day without paying the electricity bill.
Right.
That is a given. And I think accessibility has to be a built-in cost to everything that an arts entity does.
And one more comment from me, and this is for the thank you, Joel, for that. I appreciate it. For the entire panel. It seems to me, first of all, this idea that AI's been around for more than 75 years is absolutely true, but in some ways irrelevant. Because what we're talking about, the complaints that we're talking about from people are things that have come up over the past 5 years, let's say, just the speed of the change can be like overwhelming, for those of us who, you know, aren't steeped in this stuff. And believe me, I use this stuff and I like it, but it's not, we run the risk of delegating too much of our intelligence, as it were, to the artificial side and not to the human side. Let's leave aside the whole job situation, which is controversial. But what I'm afraid of is, for example, I have, 2 13-year-old, step grandkids who are really, really smart. They're using AI just as a normal way of them doing research, which is great. But sometimes I worry that they're doing that at the expense of working it out for themselves and their own creativity and their own chance to play, try new things apart from the AI. And I think that's going to be the challenge is wrestling with those kinds of, challenges. Right. So anybody who'd like to react to that, I'm happy to shut up.
First of all, I agree, Peter. That's all I'll say for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that we need to look at AI. I heard a politician about a month ago say that it's like fire, fire is very good. It's helping us cook our meals, but it can also destroy your house if it's out of control. So I believe that we do need to be aware that there's a greater risk for fraud. There's bad actors globally who can already use AI to imitate your voice, Bob's voice, Peter, all our Peter's voices. And so we need to be aware that there are bad actors who will use whatever tool they can, whether it's the internet or AI, for fraud on our community and other communities. So,
good point.
It's a great tool, but it also can be dangerous. And we also have to teach our students that AI is not everything. We also have to keep a human in the loop, even if it is doing audio descriptions for the junior colleges or for these YouTube videos. A human in the loop is always important, not only within our community, but within the whole AI community, in my opinion.
But Al, I'm not sure we're talking the same language. I agree with you. You know, there are serious, chances for people to rip people off. And I know it's happening a lot. I'm sort of worried about the push and pull between AI doing work for us, making it, less likely we'll do our own work. And I don't know where you draw that line, but I do think there is a need to be sure that we, as we educate our kids and as we use the technology, we remember that we should think for ourselves, not let AI think for us. And how you do that, I'm not sure, but I think it's an important thing we need to wrestle with.
Okay. If there are no other responses, I was considering bringing our participants in on the discussion. This is In Perspective, and we're talking about AI, also known as artificial intelligence, with our guests, Al Argo, Joel Snyder, and Peter Donahue. So, Cindy, do we have anybody else interested in joining us with our AI topic at the moment?
And Cindy, while you're getting your act together, Bob, would you like to talk a little bit about how people can get in touch with you and thank those who listened to our show last week and all that stuff?
Absolutely. Thank you for reminding me of that, Peter. First of all, let me thank Cindy for being our host for today's program and Brad for being our streamer. If you are listening live, especially right now on the stream, or when you listen later, please consider writing to us here at In Perspective if you have any questions or comments about our program at bobbranco93@gmail.com, BOBBRANCO93 @gmail.com. Okay, Cindy, what do we have?
Yes, sir, you have, and Peter, you know me too well. You have 3 hands up, okay?
All right.
And the first one is area code 626, ending in 388. You want to let us know who you are?
Mitch.
I knew it was. I didn't know if it was him or Donna.
No, it's me and Peter Altshul. You really led me into what I was going to talk about. one of the early pioneers slash developers in the AI arena, and it may have been Sam Altman, it may not, has expressed grave concerns that AI is heading down the mountain without any guardrails or any brakes. Human beings, we tend as a species, there are always exceptions, but we tend to take the easy way out. And what I fear, and I'm already seeing it, I see it in myself, is that we are relying already too heavily on AI. And I don't think it's good for the species. We aren't learning how to research for ourselves. We are not learning how to write for ourselves. The AI-driven documents that I've seen, people use the AI to take minutes to summarize meetings. They're not good. They're about C-level work. Already in college classrooms, professors have to use programs that detect whether a student has actually written his or her own papers or is using AI to do it. I'm afraid we are not equipped to deal with AI in a rational manner, and I don't think it's good for society. I really don't. Just as the internet and social media provided us with some wonderful opportunities, we are now beginning to see, particularly in the social media arena, how it seems to be producing more young people with significant mental and emotional illness because we didn't establish guardrails and ethical breaks on the technology. And we're doing the same bloody thing with AI, and it is not good for society as a whole. It is like fire. The problem is that we aren't controlling it. It's controlling us, and it'll only get more so, in my view, because of how human beings are. And I'll get off that soapbox, but what I'm not happy about the direction even now. And then I'll finish. There's AI involved in the A critter, and when the A critter, when I'm trying to get information, and the A critter then responds, "Your name, I'd like to know your name," and my response is, "You don't need to know my name. I don't want a personal relationship with you." To quote Joe Friday from Dragnet, just the facts. I don't want a personal relationship, and I'll stop now because I could go on and on and on about this topic. It really bothers me. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mitch, and you do speak for me. I'll go on record. I appreciate that very much. Any response to Mitch before we move on?
Yeah, let's see.
Okay, you ready?
Hello?
Panelists?
I'm ready.
And
go right ahead.
All right. Janine. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I agree with a lot of the comments that have been made, and I'm going to kind of piggyback off of Peter and Mitch that I personally, I like to use AI in my correspondence just to tighten up sentence structure. It'll give me new words to use. Oh, I like that word. I'm going to use that instead of the word I use. So I'm at fault for doing that, but I don't write my whole email or my whole report on AI that I know some people do. And I just think that's wrong. I think that's a form of cheating. if it really, because there's no, like Peter was saying, there's no research. There's no individual thought. There's just, I don't know. I can't do the whole reporter email by AI because I just don't think it's right. And, if you've ever called a doctor's office or a company like a cable company, you don't ever get a real person anymore. It's all AI. And if you say anything that is off script, they can't handle it. It's so frustrating.
And that's sad. That's sad, Janine. It really, really is. Do you know, Janine, that one time I called a restaurant to make a reservation for a group and AI did the reservation?
I believe it.
But here's the problem. When I arrived at the restaurant with my group, they told me we were a half an hour late. I said, I told AI 6 o'clock. I mean, I told AI 6:30. It is now 6:30. We are here on time. We are not late. So AI made mistakes.
But I wonder whether a human would have made the same mistake, right? How many times, 20 years ago before AI was, did you call and somebody screwed up the reservation? It's happened to me, so this is not just an AI thing. I worry about AI too, but in that particular example, we humans could be equally inept. So
no, but this is just an example of how AI can be inept, because a lot of people might think AI is not inept. At least we know that it is. Just like some, humans are not perfect. AI is not perfect either.
Bob, well, that's a great point. That's a great point. Mm-hmm. Because even now, thank you. Even now, 4 or 5 years ago, it was a lot worse. 10 years ago, you can imagine it was a lot worse. So the industry has only felt comfortable releasing it about 4 years ago. But we're still in the infancy of the diffusion of this innovation that's been worked on literally for the last 70 years since 1956. And when I was referring to that, I was referring to the concept. Artificial intelligence was introduced summer classes in 1956. So that term was adopted at that point. So it is old, but we're still in the infancy. We've not seen anything yet. But next year, Peter, in Texas, you will have your dream come true, because if you spend $30,000 next year, you can buy a Tesla robo-taxi. It's a two-seater. It has no steering wheel, no gas pedal, no brake pedal. And you and your partner, you and your friend, you and your grandchild can go all over Texas legally. The Department of Transportation just signed that memorandum just in the last week or two, according to what I understand. So congratulations. I'm thinking about moving to Texas because I'd love to get in my Tesla and just have it drive me to my local Target or Walmart. That's like freedom. That's independence. And that's just awesome. So that is already in production. The first ones have already rolled off the assembly line, but they won't go on sale until the end of the year and be released in 2027. But it is a two-seater. It's amazing. Yeah, and all powered by AI.
Al, I have a question.
Let me take that a little further. Because, when you're working, you're in school, or when you're in bed at night, and I have heard this from numerous sources, that the days are coming when if you own a Tesla, whether it be a Tesla or some other car, you'd be able to put it on one of these platforms, be it Tesla, Waymo, Zoops, whatever else comes around, so that while you're going about your daily life, is a situation where, you go to work in the morning, you get there, then you release the car, and it's on the autonomous rideshare network, it's out there. Handling trips for people, and you're getting a piece of the action financially, that when you're ready to use it again, it knows to come back to you. So that way it's there for, if you need to go somewhere during the day, or if, or you just want to go home or whatever. And I personally find that really awesome that your car can be out making your money while you're doing other things. And yes, Texas is the one place where we could see that very soon. Not only that, but there is research going here on the tech port here in San Antonio to develop multimodal vehicles. So you would get in here. So let's say, one scenario that's been given is since, you know, our Spurs were in the, NBA finals, they imagine a scenario where you would get in your autonomous car and it would look for, and if you want to go to, let's say, the Frostbank Center, and right now that's where the Spurs still play till the new arena is built, but you would get in your autonomous vehicle at your home and it would drive to the nearest, what they call a vertiport. The car, you know, and it goes in and it converts to a vehicle able to fly, and then it will lift off and fly between the vertiport near your home to the nearest vertiport near the Frostbank Center. Then it would land, change back to a car and leave you right off in front of the Frostbank Center. And for all we know, there might be people who are working on multimodal vehicles that can travel in land, air, and water. And it's chitty chick bang bang, a fantasy made real.
Peter,
yo,
if I could just throw one thing in, I just consulted with AI about the safety of robo taxis or autonomous vehicles versus human. I'll just read it real quickly. Self-driving cars are statistically safer than human drivers in many specific, well-mapped environments like urban taxi zones. However, overall safety remains complex. While autonomous vehicles eliminate human errors, like drunk or distracted driving, they still struggle with unusual, complex edge cases that humans handle intuitively. It can be confused by highly unpredictable environments such as construction zones, extreme weather, or rare human gestures. So, mixed bag, you're right.
So I just want to comment on that, Dr. Snyder, because he's read that not from research. He's read that from another AI model that might be, for all I know, not even updated. So
that's right.
I would like to look at the research. And so I just share this with you, I talked to a friend of mine who has a Tesla, and he told me, and he's sighted, he lives in Alabama, and he told me that he's had his Tesla about 3 years, and he lets it drive itself about 99.9% of the time. And as I was talking to him, he said, right now I'm going through a construction zone, but it's slowing down, it's doing all the maneuvers, and it's not having any issue at all. So it was really encouraging for me because I don't have a Tesla.
Sure.
And this is firsthand information from my friend.
It's firsthand,
very comfortable.
It's firsthand, but it's anecdotal. And the only point I'm making is that AI itself acknowledges that it's a mixed bag. So
I know we have another plan, but I want to add to this complexity. So when I was running a disability awareness workshop back in 1994, we're talking a long time ago, I asked the question, why can't blind people be airline pilots? And, people and said, well, you can't see, the instrument panel. Well, you could have the instrument panel spoken to you. You know, you could get it to speak. Well, what about this? Well, you could get that spoken. So, so I was trying to make the case. But the punchline, of course, was we still could be airline pilots because what if this technology fell apart somehow, right? What if this technology did something weird and you'd have to, and you were responsible for the lives of passengers? You still got to be able to see to fly an airplane, right? And I think we're struggling with the same dynamic here where these self-driving cars are awesome. I am not opposed to them at all. I just wonder what's going to happen if we blind people are in a car and something weird happens, as Joel's talking about. And we can't see it, how reliant can we be on these things, to be safe, not just for ourselves, but for people around us. Cindy.
Yes.
We have about 5 minutes. We have one more hand, I believe.
No, you don't. You have two.
Oh,
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go. All right. Stacy.
Stacy, go right ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, I agree that there should be very much caution involved when you have moving vehicles that are autonomous. But secondly, I want to let you know that when I was at the convention last year, and I was a virtual, but still, I could tell, and I am a very big novice at it, but I could swear that the Spanish interpretation of all these resolutions was written by AI, not done by human translators.
And so the question, Stacy, for you and me is, I'm sure you're right, but is it worth it? In other words, we want that Spanish translation to support those of folks who speak Spanish, who are members of this organization, in this case, ACB. We want that to be there. But the quality isn't quite there. It probably will get better in the next 5 years. Is it worth it? Is a trade-off worth it?
I think it may be. I mean, we've got people like Mary Ward, for instance, who can, you know, I'm just saying, we got people like JC who can, you know, translate things. I mean, we got people that know Spanish.
In other words, the human touch is always important.
That's the challenge, right? We want this service. And we want humans to do it all, but I think the two are not always possible. One more hand. Thank you, Stacy.
Yeah, we got one more, and we got about 2 minutes, so we'll give them a shot.
Shows.
All right, Deborah.
Thank you. Hello. Deborah, yes, welcome. Hello. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good topics, by the way.
Thank you.
There's a place for AI. There is a good place for it. And there is a negative place for it. What about general child's play? You know, it used to be that, you know, your parents sent you outside and you used to develop your own games to play using your imagination. And you used to get together and you all knew how to socialize. Nowadays, cell phones are AI, and so many people are on their cell phones. They don't know how to socialize anymore. The other thing is, as we age, we have to be extremely careful with our minds, because our minds are very precious, and also, the mind is easily abused by not encouraging self-creativity.
That's my concern, too.
The other thing is about these Teslas.
You have about 30 seconds, Deb.
Okay. What about that Tesla, that driver that drove through an elderly lady's house and killed her?
Again, I want to make the quick comment that humans have done the same thing.
Yep.
You know, yes. Okay. Yes.
So we can't just.
Yes,
put this
they out. Have.
But
and,
do
and,
you
and
have?
It is safer. Joel is right. It is safer, I think, by and large, to be in one of those cars.
But are you going to fully trust that vehicle? You can't. It's like, you know what? Even a guide dog.
Yeah, we're out of time, unfortunately. I'm sorry to interrupt. This is a great conversation. We should keep doing this another time, but we are out of time. I want to thank everybody. First of all, Peter Donahue, Joel Snyder, Al Argo. Thank you for taking the time to be with us to talk about this very controversial topic. It was much appreciated having you all here. And of course, I want to thank our host, our facilitator, our streamer, our participants, and Peter, of course, Peter Algill. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. I'm Bob Branco, and talk to you next week. Have a great week, everybody.